What in God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Our on-the-spot reporter from the city to surf is Mark Latham. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Brent. I'm on the spot, all right. I'm labouring up Heartbreak Hill.
Oh, you just if we could have crossed at a worse time, I don't think we could have picked it. So you're just going up Heartbreak Hill now.
Yeah, I've broken into a walk to handle it and not be panting to the point where the audience is distracted. So, yeah, I'm going all right. A beautiful day here. You said it was raining there. But
yeah, it's rained this morning
day
here.
In Sydney.
Beautiful day, is it?
Yeah, really nice. Sun's out. 90,000 people in this run slash walk. The biggest number. Full house, first time since COVID. So, yeah, it's the first time I've done it. It's a massive community event. And I'm here walking with Joel Fitzgibbon, your former member for Hunter, former Defence Minister, in support of the fundraising effort for the Commandos Welfare Trust to honour his son, Jack Fitzgibbon, who was a commando training in the parachute division and 5 months ago passed away in an accident. And Joel and his family and all the supporters have been raising money, nearly $100,000 for the Commando Trust, looking after the welfare of families and injured commandos. Anyone who wants to donate to that wonderful cause, just Google 14 for Fitz. That's the number 1414 for Fitz. And donate generously, because they put in a wonderful effort to honour Jack Fitzgibbon. And that's part of our walk and run today.
Well, I know that Joel Fitzgibbon has been a long-time friend of 2HD, which obviously on a Sunday morning we're broadcasting on the network, so we're going all over the place. But Joel Fitzgibbon, obviously being from Cessnock, has been a long-time friend of 2HD and always makes himself or always made himself available when announcers wanted to talk to him. So he has supported us. We've got to get there and support him and his family. You say 14 for Fitz, F-I-T-Z.
Yeah, just Google that. Go to the links for making a donation. And Joel's right here next to me. So he's still a Cessnock resident and a great supporter of the Hunter Valley. And this welfare fund supporting the memory of his son, who was a wonderful Australian, passed away in our Defence Forces. You know, the Defence Forces and the legacy effort doesn't get enough recognition. So this is a wonderful fundraising effort.
It absolutely is. I hope that we can add a few dollars to that that particular fund today. Thank you for that, Mark. Let's talk about some topics while you're having a walk. The headline story says Chris Minns orders public servants back to work, forcing New South Wales public servants back into the office may have unintended consequences, including higher than expected attrition rates, is the story today, and reversing gains for employees with a disability. So I suppose there's good and there's bad about this, but this was the order that came from Chris Minns' office.
Oh, yes, and they also say it's a blow to workplace flexibility for women in particular who've got young children. And obviously there's an issue about the office space. Is it adequate if you end work from home and send them all back to the office if you've got the equipment to make it feasible? But, Brent, the interesting thing is that Berrettay and Berejiklian five times ordered the public servants to go back to the office, and it was ignored. The public servants said basically we like work from home, maybe a bit of a morning cafe and catch up with friends and work from home, get the job done that way. And they ignored the Berejiklian and Berrettay governments, and I think they're going to ignore Chris Minns, which confirms something I've said about New South Wales politics for quite some time, that the public servants run it much more than the state cabinet.
Sad but true. There was a story today. Did you pick up, I don't know whether you've had the chance to read the papers today, but did you read the story today about Dominic Perrottet saying that, you know, his government wasn't, we didn't deserve to win was the headlines. He said, in some ways, we didn't deserve to win. It's almost 18 months since Dominic Perrottet lost the 2023 state election. And they say he's never been so candid. Now he's leaving politics behind him for good. He's putting on the record the reasons why the coalition was turfed from office after 12 years. He said, I don't think we had a united team. We didn't deserve to win, and Labor did.
Well, I don't know if Labor deserved to win. Chris Minns didn't have much of a policy agenda. they tried to feed off the mistakes of the Perisay government, the perceptions about the Barilaro appointment to the United States and that kind of thing. And since then, Chris Minns has shown he doesn't have much in an agenda in New South Wales either. So maybe Perisay's a bit hard on himself. I think he was a reasonable premier, much better premier than Chris Minns. But the main factor they had, after 12 years in government, there was a time for change mood, and that narrowly turfed them out.
Karen Webb's been in the news again this week. Gee, she's doing it tough. She really is. She needs to get some better staff to give her some good advice. This week it's about the gin. Ever get a bottle of gin from the police, Commissioner Mark?
No, no, anything I've ever got from the police are speeding tickets. So no bottle of gin, I'm sorry. And Karen Webb's made a huge mistake here because she says that the problem with the police are not these issues about overspending and some of the mistakes they've made in recruitment in New South Wales policing and understaffing in places like Western Sydney. She thinks the problem is the leakers putting the information out there, and she's now going to be spending money to have a police inquiry into who's identifying the problems. Well, Karen Webb, your job as police commissioner is to solve the problem, not to spend extra resources on identifying who's talking about them. So I think she's lost the plot. And among all those problems and difficulties she's had, I think the state government would be well advised to move her on.
Look, the big story this week, I suppose, was this kerfuffle between you and Peter Volandis. Racing New South Wales boss Peter Volandis has accused you of conducting a smear campaign against him with absolutely zero evidence. We know there was a clash of the two of you on Friday. Tell us exactly what it's all about, Mark.
Well, the upper house has got a committee of inquiry into the sale of Rose Hill, and clearly on Friday the evidence there is it's a complete debacle. The head of the ATC, Peter McGoran, has been telling people that realised $5 billion from the sale and make all these upgrades at other racetracks, and it turns out the real number is $1.6 billion. They've got no credible valuation report for the $5 billion. But out of it, in calling for submissions about racing in New South Wales, we've received a lot that don't reflect very well on the regulator, Racing New South Wales, and they're serious allegations that have been made, and as part of procedural fairness, they've got to be put to the person the allegations are against. So we did that on Friday, and Mr. Volandis used his own parliamentary privilege three times, quite absurdly, to say, oh, it's like Mr. Latham being charged with domestic violence, and someone putting that out there. Well, you know, it was all a bit unedifying, and I think a lot of people were surprised that Racing New South Wales is not actually a competent professional organisation, and that's certainly reflected in the submissions we've received. And I can assure you, Brent, the only things that I've raised are backed by evidence, documented evidence, in the submissions to the inquiry, and that, quite frankly, is my job, to raise the things that have been submitted to us. And Mr. Volandis had his right of reply and used a good part of it to say that I'm up on domestic violence charges, which is just absurd.
What's your reaction to the comments that were made by Chris Minns saying that you used the coward's castle under parliamentary privilege to make those comments against Peter Volandis?
Well, it's a parliamentary inquiry, and part of our job is to take seriously, particularly the confidential submissions that have been made, to articulate these issues. And I would have thought, as a Labor Premier, Chris Minns might have had some concern for the workers who said that there's a toxic workplace environment at Racing New South Wales, that there's CCTV surveillance of them, that the email and web traffic is being monitored, that some people aren't allowed to join a union. So Chris Minns couldn't give two hoots about the workers or even understand what's happened with the parliamentary inquiry, and he spoke entirely from a position of ignorance, wanting to push through the sale of Rose Hill Racecourse to jam 100,000 people into Camellia Rose Hill, our new Hong Kong in apartments towers. So his project's going down the drain, and he's blaming me.
What do you say to the comments that have been made that you are the mouthpiece for rich racehorse breeders and owners?
Well, that's not reflected in the submissions and the matters I've raised. The submissions come from respected people across the racing industry in New South Wales, and whistleblowers who, at one time, were the senior staff at Racing New South Wales employed by Peter Volandis. So, it's got, I mean, you can... So think you're being smeared and your answer is to smear someone else. So this is all evidence-based. It's all part of the parliamentary process, and I look forward to Mr. Volandis and others answering all these matters in full.
The RBA met again this week on Tuesday. There was lots of talk about the thought that interest rates would go up. 50% of economists thought interest rates would go up, and the other 50% thought that they would stay where they are. They made the decision to sit on their hands, but like most of these announcements after their meeting, they sort of say, well, but there is a chance that interest rates could go up. But when you look at other advice that's come from this meeting and other economists, we spoke to Mark Bouras yesterday, it seems as though they're going to keep interest rates where they are now for a minimum of 6 months, Mark.
Yeah, that was the announcement. They won't be coming down for at least 6 months. And the other thing that the Governor of the Reserve Bank, Michelle Bullock, has pointed out is that they're restrained a lot by the level of fiscal stimulus, the overspending, the deficit and debt budgeting as federal and state governments in New South Wales. The state governments that are the culprits here are in Victoria and New South Wales. We're going to see record federal government deficits. And her point is that all adds to inflation. So what's the point of throwing money at people with so-called cost of living relief if it drives up inflation through deficit budgeting and stops the Reserve Bank from cutting interest rates to give the home buyers the relief that they need? So, you know, it's a pretty stern message there for Jim Chalmers in Canberra and Daniel Mookie in New South Wales. Get your budget balanced. Take the pressure off inflation and give the Reserve Bank a fair chance to bring down interest rates. And they'd like to do it, I think, sometime earlier than the six-month limit, but the poor state, the federal and state budgets, mean that they're restrained. So it's quite the economic mess.
Mark Bouras was saying yesterday there's concern that they'll keep the interest rate where they are until, look, 2026 if things don't change.
Yeah, we've had periods in the past where the Reserve Bank has sat on its hands for a couple of years, didn't move interest rates. That's normally a period of economic stability, but that's long past. We went through COVID, a lot of policy mistakes there, the labour market shortages, the supply chain blockages driving up inflation, and that's now made worse by these federal and state budget deficits. So I don't think they'll be sitting there for a couple of years doing nothing, but they'd like to see the budgets come into balance to give them a chance to bring down interest rates as inflation falls.
Now, let's talk Olympics. Overnight, Jessica Hull, she got the silver medal, missed out on the gold, but the difference between second and third was 0.05 seconds. This is the women's 1500 metres. Fantastic result for Jessica Hull. I see that today they have come out in support of our breakdancer, Mark, Ray Gunn.
Well, come on, Brett. The big athletic achievement we've got to note is that I've just topped Heartbreak Hill.
I'm on the plateau here on the way down.
But seriously, I got up at 4.15 this morning to watch Jessica Hull. What a magnificent effort. It was our first medal of any description in that event, male or female, the 1500 since 1960, so before I was born.
Yeah.
So her run was sensational. The leader was kind of in her own race. But, yeah, she's hung on for the silver medal, and I hope that encourages all the little athletics and competitors. She's from Albion Flats there in the Illawarra and seemed like a really down-to-earth, obviously well-dedicated person. So she's fantastic. As for the breakdancer, I've seen better dancing at the Green Valley Hotel at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I just thought it was appalling. Now, obviously, not everyone we send to the Olympics covers themselves in glory. And I'm glad to hear that breakdancing is being abolished from the Olympics, because I don't know why it was ever regarded as a sporting event. The poor Australian competitor basically looked like a goose. I don't know who advised at a break dance like that, but geez, even from the grave, Michael Jackson could have done a better job.
That's so true. I tell you what, though, haven't we done well this time around at Paris with the Olympics? I mean, as it is at the moment, we're still sitting third on the ladder with the medal tally. That seems to be just incredible for us. Best result ever.
Yeah, it's a long while since we've been that high on the medal tally against the big nations. Obviously, we'll never be China or the United States. But per capita head of population, we're number one. For the medals we've won per head of population, we're punching well and truly above our weight. I don't know if they'll get past the 18 gold, they've tied that record, but it's been a tremendous effort, a lot better than I would have expected, and right across the board, you know, whether you talk about the canoeing, the swimming, the athletics, it's been a great credit to them. So they've obviously got good funding, good support, and the encouragement of the entire nation. So we've all enjoyed it, notwithstanding the difficulty of having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch the major events.
Our on-the-spot reporter from the City to Surf, Mark Latham, joining us this morning. You've conquered Heartbreak Hill. Have you ever walked Heartbreak Hill before?
No, my first time in the City to Surf. I live out in the southwest fringe, and it's always seemed a long way to come on a Sunday morning. But supporting Joel Fitzgibbon, his family, and the memory of Jack, and 14 for Fitz, the fundraising effort, I just needed to be here, and I'm glad I have, because there's a lot of other fundraising going on, people doing the right thing, a community event, 90,000 people all engaged in a lot of good spirit. Unfortunately, the odd political protester, the Palestinians, making their point known. I don't know what that's got to do with a running or walking event. But anyway, overall, it's been fantastic.
Terrific. Thanks, mate, for doing this. We really appreciate it. I mean, it shows commitment beyond the pale, as they say. So we thank you for taking the time out of your City to Surf event and still doing what you do for us. We really appreciate it, mate.
Thanks, Brian. I think I've got 6 kilometres to go, so maybe, I hope I haven't spoken too soon. It's a fantastic event, and you don't find me suffering or struggling in the gutter or something. But, yeah, it's beautiful weather here and a fantastic day.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
And please pass on our best regards to Joel, if you will. He's gone. There you go. Isn't that terrific? Mark Latham, our on-the-spot reporter from the City to Surf. As he says, 90,000 people took part in today's City to Surf. It's the biggest event on the planet in reference to this type of marathon. Just amazing, I suppose. It's a marathon for some. It's a Sunday run for others. 14 kilometres up Heartbreak Hill, out to Bondi. It's just fantastic. So we do thank Mark Latham.